Last week we talked about how, first of all, because we're all broken people, right? We know this because sin has entered the world. We're all messed up. We're jacked up from the floor up. We like to use that phrase. But because of that, because of our difference in personalities, our communication styles, the way we view the world, all of these things lead us into constant conflict because of our differences. And this happens particularly in marriage because we know that opposites tend to attract. And when that happens, it's a great thing by God's design, but it also can be a challenging thing. So we understand that conflict is something that happens across all marriages. And so then with that, what we start thinking about is, man, we want to try to figure out how can we navigate conflict? If we know it's coming, how can we navigate it better? How can we move to a place of development rather than division? And one of the things we pointed out last week was that at the root of most conflicts, it's typically a deeper issue, and it's typically one of the two. It's either perceived threat or perceived neglect. That typically at the root of all conflict is typically one of those two things.
I think we should give them an example probably.
Already?
Yep.
Are
I think
sure?
We should just start
Did
it off.
Did I approve this one?
Maybe. Just go along with it.
By the way, there's going to be a lot of this unplanned conversation that might lead us to a fight in front of you right here this very morning.
Yeah, it might.
All right, go ahead. Yeah. What do you got to say?
Okay, so when Chad and I first started dating, he had to come to the realization that I live in Houston and allergies suck, and I am somebody who suffers from severe allergies.
Don't understand.
Yeah, he is blessed.
Anybody else? No allergies? When people complain about it, you're like, I don't get it.
And then everybody else who has allergies? Yeah, there's a lot more of us. Okay, so anyways.
The rest of you are at home asleep.
Yeah, the rest of you are at home because of Benadryl. Okay, so allergies, really bad. When we first got married and started living together, I was like, hey, listen, please do not spray cologne or like spray deodorant in our bedroom or in the bathroom. Like, wait till you get to the car, wait till you get to work, but like, please do not, because that can like trigger a really bad allergy day. So I explained this to him, and I was like, that's the only thing. Of all the things, it's the only thing. Please don't do it.
And I'm thinking, okay, good husband. I could do that.
Yeah.
It's not that hard.
So simple.
Until a day happened when I ran out of stick deodorant. And I wasn't going to make the world suffer. And so I improvised, because that's what men do best. We improvise on the fly. And I pulled into my old bag and I grabbed that spray deodorant and I sprayed it without remorse because I just assumed it's going to air out before the day's over. Like, no problem. But apparently it was a problem.
Nope, that was a big problem. So I woke up and walked into our bathroom and obviously, being a woman, I was like, he hates me. He sprayed his deodorant. Either he hates me, he's mad at me, and I'm like, what did I do yesterday? What did I not do yesterday? And then I'm like, okay, maybe he just doesn't care. He forgot. He forgot that this is something that matters to me. And so I sent him a text message saying, hey, what's going on? Because you sprayed your deodorant.
I'd like to read that text. I'm just kidding. Just kidding. Didn't do that.
Appreciate it.
It was angry. And Sarah doesn't get angry very often, but it was angry. Mm-hmm. But here's the point. The point of that story really brings to light that idea. That there were two root issues. It really wasn't about the sprayed deodorant. It was really about two things. She felt neglected. He doesn't care about me. He just did this anyway. Didn't even take time to think about how this would affect me. And I'm thinking threat, because that text message was aggressive. Was that necessary? I'm just trying to survive here, trying to help everyone else out in the world. And so at the root of most, not all, but at the root of most problems is this idea, perceived neglect, perceived threat. Mark 3:25 says this, and if a house is divided against itself, that house will not be able to stand. Now, this verse is not talking specifically about marriage, but the principle is very helpful for us, that we as couples, we want to be careful to not let things get in between us that should, though it should unite us, ends up dividing us. That's what we don't want. And so what we know is that conflict often leads to division. And so the goal today is to try to deal with that, to try to do something about it.
We want to talk about the five most common, not the only, just the most common things that couples will fight about within marriage.
Let me interrupt you here, because these five are not our big thing. Do you know what our big thing is? Do you know what it is? Do you know what our big thing that we fight it? It's her lack of faith in my driving. That's our biggest problem. Our biggest problem is that, can I keep going? Great. Our biggest problem.
And his lack of knowing how to follow directions when I give them. So it's in the car. It's driving. Just driving.
Car's 100 yards away.
Yep.
Just saying.
Yep.
We're safe.
And you
we
can,
also fight over Mario
down.
Kart. That's
yep.
another one.
Yep.
I guess they're both about driving, so yep. driving is our issue. So
our issue.
Point
yep.
is, we understand these aren't the main. By the way, the other two big ones that didn't quite make the list
yeah.
were in-laws and...
Love you, mother-in-law.
Yeah. We cut
that's
that, though,
mine.
Because
it's
my mom's
mine.
Here,
yep.
so I felt like that was inappropriate.
Yep.
In-laws, and then the other one is jealousy, actually. Jealousy is a big yep. reason a couple's fight. But that was number 6 and 7. We want to cover the big five, and again,
yeah.
we understand it may not be yours, but ideally, as people have polled, these are the five that come to the top of the list.
So now, if y'all are single, if y'all are dating, if y'all are engaged, do not tune out. This is not just for married people. These are things that we all will fight about, and so listen now so that you can avoid pain and heartache and fights in the future. Yeah, he gets it. He gets it. He's like, yes, listen.
Someone
now.
Should have told me that when we got married. It's
yes.
true. It really
yes.
is true. And by the way, this could be each topic could be its own message. So we're not going to try to cover everything.
Yeah.
But our goal is to highlight the topic and give you maybe a thought or two that could at least get you started on some conversation that might help you maybe lead to some resolution
yeah.
when we deal with it. Now, right out of the gate, let me say this. One of the other things that comes on the list is communication. But we took it off the list, and here's why. We know that communication is one of the big reasons couples fight, but communication is what makes these big five even worse. And so we separated communication because we think that if you're going to deal with any of these big five or any other big issue you have, it starts with healthy communication. So I want to throw this up on the screen really quick. So these are essentially, you could think of it as four layers or four levels of communication that we all go through. We all talk about. First is small talk. We get that. It's just basic conversation. This is talking in the context of marriage. The second layer is reporter talk. Example would be just reporting the facts. Like, hey, where's Kyla? She went missing, our daughter. Well, she wasn't really missing. She was just next. I know it was dark. Whatever.
That seems
she was next door at the neighbor's
talk.
House. They were playing, and we didn't know where she was, right? So you're just reporting the fact. There's no emotion. There's no depth. You're just sharing information. This is what a lot of us do at the end of a day. How was your day? It was great. That's it. This isn't bad. But if your communication level stops there, you might be missing out on really making some progress. The next one is being able to share ideas and opinions. Okay, so we're getting a little deeper. And then final level is that true deep-rooted communication, which often involves emotion. And then some of you go, wait a minute, you're supposed to do that every day? No, not at all. But what we're saying is, if as a couple, if you can't get to a place where you have deep emotional conversations periodically throughout a week or a month, there's a really good chance you're going to have a hard time solving some of these challenges we're going to cover today, because it takes good, honest, open communication that is thoughtful of the other's opinions to be able to solve some of these differences. So communication is a big thing, but we took it off the list. We just want to get you kind of started with that. So let's jump into number one. Number one is finances. Finances tends to be one of the biggest issues that married couples fight over. Finances, it's difference of opinion on this. And typically what because we didn't do the research, we just read it. What the research has found is that typically financial arguments are about a deeper issue, not just money. And they typically can be boiled into three, okay? Three things. Here's the first one. The first one is a fear of not having influence in important decisions. So it's possible that the two spouses are seeing things a little bit differently, and one feels like they don't have influence in the big decision, okay? So maybe an example might be, hypothetically, of course, I go out, buy a brand new, amazing TV. I come home and say, hey, look what I bought. Sarah looks at it and goes, you didn't think you could ask? Maybe you should ask about that? Like, maybe get permission before you spent that money? You didn't say it that way.
No, nope,
hypothetical,
have.
Of course. But
yeah.
maybe this happened
but
once
maybe.
In our marriage.
Just once.
Yeah.
yeah.
But
yeah.
I came home with the TV, an amazing TV. It was awesome. She still watches it to this day, by the way. But because I didn't talk to her about it, I didn't ask her about it, I just showed up with it. She felt like, man, I don't have say in important decisions. That's one of the big reasons that couples fight. Number two is fear of not having security in the future. fear of not having security in the future. This often comes to light when you have the saver versus the spender, and most of us married the opposite of us. Not all, but most of us. One of you is the saver, one of you is the spender. You don't have to say it. I already know. It's cool. I can hear your mm-hmms around. So for those of us, if you're the spender, you're usually less worried about the future, more worried about the now. If you're the saver, you're a little more worried about the future and a little less worried about the now. And this can tend to lead to some conflicts. Maybe that's happened with us potentially.
Yes.
Probably not. Okay, great. Yeah. Awesome.
I mean, no.
Yes?
No.
You think
it's
so?
Fine. It's fine.
Yeah. We have?
We have. No, I
are you the saver or the spender? Spender, exactly. It's a real problem in our... I'm just kidding. Sorry. I'm just trying to stir
y'all
the pot.
Y'all should see his shoe collection compared to my shoe collection. I'm just saying. I'm not the one with the problem. Just throwing it out there. No, but going back to that, the fear of not planning for the future, that's definitely me. I grew up in a family where money was kind of talked about in a way that was fearful. Like, will we have enough to send 7 kids to college? Because I was one of 7. Are we going to be able to do certain things? Yeah. And so when we got married, we really had to sit down and I was like, listen, if you promise to be good, like, I will trust you in this. And so he helped me spend more money and I helped him save a lot of money.
That's right. So that is potentially, and it's usually between the spender and the saver.
Yeah.
The last one is fear of not having respect shown for what you value. So I would say this is probably lower on the list, but for those that this is a thing, this can really be touchy. So let's give an example. Maybe you recently started coming to church. I'll use the church as an example just because we're here. You started coming to church and you go, hey, man, I really like what's happening here. I love seeing what God's doing. I would like for us as a family to help to contribute. We want to be part of giving. We want to give to the church. We want to help God's mission move forward. And maybe your spouse is like, that'd be fun, but we're going to buy a boat first and then we'll get back to the giving. Right? And if your spouse is just dead set on, we're buying a boat, not doing that, you might start to feel this, well, like what I value and what you value seem to be two different things, but you don't have any respect for what I value. I really want to be able to do this because part of that money's my money. I want to be able to. So there may be things like that you kind of have some tension over because it feels like you don't value what each other value. And that's an important thing that you want to navigate. By the way, that wasn't a plug to give to the church, just for the record. Just saying, it's an understandable deal because you might, maybe one of you is all about maybe an adoption organization or ministry, and maybe your spouse is like, I don't have no connection to that. I'd rather give over here. We want to feel like our values are being respected, and this can often be a place of contention. So
yeah. Proverbs 3:9-10 says, honor the Lord with your wealth and with the best part of everything you produce. Then he will fill your barns with grain and your vats will overflow with good wine.
And we felt like just in this moment talking about money, it's a good time to just remind you that what we want to encourage you to do two things. Okay. If we could encourage you as a married couple or as a couple, two things. One, get on the same page when it comes to finances. Just try to your best to get on the same page. Be respectful of that. Figure out what that looks like and do it. And then stick to it. But the second thing is I want to encourage you, just pastorally, to value what God values.
Yeah.
Value what God values. Okay, we're not going to tell you how to use your money or where to give your money. And this isn't even a plug to give your money here. I just think that God's mission has got to keep moving forward. And it takes his people to help move that mission forward. And so you may find an organization or something outside of this. And that's wonderful. But I just want to encourage you to be faithful with what God has already given you and use it to help move his mission forward. We have not been perfect at this, but I can say that when we have chosen to be very, very faithful to God, he has been so faithful to us. Doesn't always mean new house and a new car, but I'm just telling you, there's just a different sense of his faithfulness that we feel when we're first faithful with what he gives us. So we'll leave that out there for you to take it and do as you wish, but we just feel like this is a great opportunity. God is doing great work in the world, and we want to help because he's been so faithful to us to help move his mission forward, whatever that looks like. So, okay.
So the next one. It's fun.
Sex.
Yep, sex.
If you have kids, put earmuffs on.
Yeah, we're going to talk about sex.
Do you ever wonder, I'm going to ask you a question. This could be inappropriate later. Do you ever wonder if married couples around the world, bedrooms, kitchen counters, are having more sex than your marriage?
Yes.
Do you ever have that question? Somebody does. Listen, you're not alone, okay? Some of you are like, this is super awkward. Let me tell you, you're not alone. Because for most people, this is the biggest point of contention when it comes to conflict in marriage in regards to sex or sexual intimacy is frequency.
Yeah, and it's hard to believe because in our culture, sex is everywhere. It is in songs and commercials and books and TV shows, like everywhere you look.
Instagram.
Everywhere you look, it's all about sex. And so it can be hard to imagine like, oh, we're the only ones that are really struggling with this. But that's just not the case.
It is. It's mostly for most. Genesis 2:24 says this. Some of you are like, this is uncomfortable. Not as much for Sarah. This explains why a man leaves his father and mother and is joined to his wife. And the two are, here's the key word, united into one. Listen, sex is a gift from God. It's a gift from God with two key purposes. There's a few other things, but two key. It's procreation and intimacy. Procreation, of course, to bear children, and I get it. Not everyone in this room will bear children. Now, some of us are praying for that miracle to happen. It hasn't happened yet. We're on your side. We're praying with you. Listen, I don't belittle that. But for those that have kids, I want you to understand, like, this is a gift from God to procreate. But here's the big thing. It's about intimacy. That God says, I want to take these two and unite them as one in a way that they will not experience with any other relationship in their life. This is the gift from God. It's to build intimacy. And in that intimacy, you find these other gifts like protection, like pleasure, like all of these things. But the goal is to bring two and unite them as one. And so we bring that up because it's so interesting that when our culture is saturated with sex, that it's everywhere, it's everywhere, it's everywhere. And then we think about how important it is for two people to stay united and to do that regularly so that they can have that connection that they don't have with anyone else. And you think about that and you go, man, naturally, this should be no problem. And yet it is the biggest issue.
Yes, the frequency is the biggest issue.
It's a coordination failure, if you want to put it that way.
Yeah, coordination failure. You're not on the same page at the same time, so it just doesn't happen.
Because I'm too tired.
Yeah, or my head hurts. Yeah, y'all be used to that. But here's the thing.
My head hurt wasn't on the paper. Where did
I know.
That come from?
Okay.
Well, you just make that up?
I did.
About I'm not in the mood?
Yep, that's another one.
Let's
not
just
in the
keep
mood.
Going.
Yep.
How about you're wearing pajamas and it's not helpful right now?
Well, but let's also talk about how it doesn't start in the bedroom. The intimacy does not start when you walk into the bedroom.
Prove.
Let's just say, stop talking. This is my part.
Literally paid to do this. Okay, go ahead.
That's true. Okay, so let's just say your husband comes home, he walks in, he walks past you, he goes to the room, he changes out of his work clothes.
Looking good.
He comes back out, he sits on the couch, he watches football or whatever, and then it's dinner time, y'all sit down, he eats the meal, and then y'all go to bed, and he's like, hey. And you're like, no.
For the record, I don't do that. I just want to be clear.
This is not about him.
It's not about us.
But.
It's about them.
But. We can all learn things, though.
True.
Okay,
true.
So let's say, though, your husband walks in and he goes, oh, babe, how was your day? You look so beautiful.
Yes, you do.
And then it's dinner time and he sits down. He was like, man, babe, this was the best meal you've ever made. Thank you so much.
So good.
And then he goes, you know what? You sit down and watch TV. I'll do the dishes. And you're like, oh, that's so sweet. Thank you so much. And then you go to the bedroom and he's like, hey. And you're like, yes, let's do this. It starts before the bedroom. That's all I'm saying.
Why has it got to be dishes, though? Can't it be something we love? I'm just kidding. No, 100% true. It's listen, guys, there's a physical, but for ladies, that emotional connection is so important. It's not the only thing. It's so helpful. So, guys, if you want to experience better coordination,
if you want to up the frequency,
start by loving on your wife really well.
Yeah.
Serving your wife well. And both of us serving each other will lead to much better success here. But we don't want this to be a thing. We've got to stay together. It's so important.
Yeah.
And it is by God's design, by the way, not ours. We're just grateful. God made it a pleasurable experience, something that's so important.
Yeah.
Number three, work-life balance. Let me read you a passage. This is actually Jesus as our example for this. Mark chapter 6, verse 30 says, the apostles returned to Jesus from their ministry tour. So they were out serving and doing ministry. And told Jesus all that they had done and taught. Then Jesus said, "Let's go off by ourselves to a quiet place and rest a while." He said this because there were so many people coming and going that Jesus and his apostles didn't even have time to eat. So they left by boat for a quiet place where they could be alone. And the reason this is important, this obviously isn't talking about marriage, but Jesus is modeling something that's so important for all of us. And that is that Jesus made sure that he and his posse, if you will, took time to rest and to connect, to rest and to connect. And so there's a really good chance in this room that one, if not both of you, are eating, sleeping, breathing work in some capacity. And if that's the case, listen, we get it. But it's also very easy for this to creep in and to be a point of contention. And it's oftentimes because of our difference in schedule, ambition, or value expectations. And so we recognize this, and then we want to try to combat this. So
there's actually a fix for it.
Okay, go
There's
for
a
it.
Fix.
Prove it.
Yep. It's called date night.
Okay.
We're not talking about our little Bible study we do. That is fun. You should join.
You
we start
should
again in the fall.
Check it out.
But what I mean is dating your spouse. If you want to put the, yes, statistics up here. So once a week, having a date night is proven to help you have a better work-life balance, and yet 4% of us do that. Let's jump to the bottom. 36% of y'all, yeah, I'm talking to y'all, y'all date once a year. Y'all go on one date in 12 months. That's a problem.
What about sitting on the couch watching TV?
That is
connection.
Not a date. It's not a date.
What about sitting on the couch watching TV while eating dinner?
No.
That I made for you?
Maybe. No. Not really. No.
So what does this look like?
Date night.
Give us practical. What,
yes.
What does this look like? So we could. Yeah. What does it involve? So we have a better idea.
Yeah. It's doing a hobby together. It's having face-to-face time. It's having conversations that are past reporter talk, past small talk, are not about kids, are not about work, but goals and dreams, things that y'all would like to do in the future. Again, it doesn't have to be
how
elaborate
are you feeling,
or
really feeling.
Yes.
What have I done this week that upset you? That maybe
like cutting me off right now.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll fight later, but it'll be fair. Anyways. No, but again, dates don't have to be expensive, because I know sometimes that is a deterrent. They don't have to be long. Nope. It can be, hey, once a week we're going to commit to going on a walk together after dinner, and that's it. But it is, again, a time where it's just the two of you and you have time to talk.
And doing stuff you both enjoy.
Yeah, like
that's
pickleball.
Important. Yeah, like pickleball.
But sometimes you fight in that too.
And that's because you don't stay on your side.
Yeah.
But if you pick stuff... Pick stuff that you enjoy doing together, right?
Yeah.
So that will be it'll be something you look forward to rather than that. And then when date night comes back here at River Point, you should definitely sign up because it was designed to help us.
And I'm not supposed to do a plug for date night, but I will say this. Even though Chad and I lead date night, our marriage always benefits from it. Because again, it's reminding us on a consistent basis to have those basic conversations that are past just the reporter talk. So when it comes back, y'all should definitely check it out if you have not.
By the way, date night typically is scheduled when Sarah comes to me and goes, "Hey, we're not talking." Get date night back on the calendar.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Just so we're all in this boat.
Yes.
All right. Okay, let's talk about two more real quick. Number four is parenting. One of the toughest sayings, parenting. Newsweek magazine said the toughest job you will ever love is parenting. I like that. I like to call kids a bruising blessing as well. Because they are that, they're blessing, but they leave bruises, and it's amazing.
Yep.
Psalm 127, this is our key verse here at this campus, at least, when it comes to parenting and kids. It says, "Children are a gift from the Lord. They are a reward from him. Children born to a young man are like arrows in a warrior's hand." And the idea here is an arrow, back at this time when this was written, an arrow was handcrafted, right? The point would be sharpened, the stick would be shaved down, the whatever feathers in the back, like everything was hand done with great intention. Then it was stored in that quiver, which is what held the arrows, until the warrior needed to use it to launch out. The idea is for us as parents, God has given us these children, and they are not here to make us happy. There are some happy moments, particularly when they're asleep. There are happy moments, but God did not bring kids to us to make us happy. God brought kids to us so that we could be a part of raising them up so that they could become an effective tool, an arrow in the hand of a warrior. But who's the warrior? You and me? No, the warrior is God.
Yeah.
that we would raise them up, develop them, shape them, mold them so that God could then take them and launch them out into the world to make an impact for his kingdom. So parenting is such a great gift that God's given us. It's a lot of pressure. Yeah. I think we get the wrong perspective of why we do it. We think it's about us. These kids are just in the way. Well, of course they're in the way because it's part of the process. And so, but when it comes to parenting and when it comes to marriage, a lot of times our biggest conflicts, I think, can be resolved by one, just getting on the same page.
The same page. I mean, Chad and I grew up very differently. I'm the oldest of seven kids. Oldest of three. So the oldest thing gets in the way a little bit. But again, like I grew up in a home where there was no divorce, and then he came from a divorced home.
Yep.
And so there were different things that we kind of had to talk through with expectations and hopes, values. I was homeschooled. I know that explains a lot. But, you know, like we had to talk through some of these things. But y'all might come from different cultures as well, that you have values that you want to make sure are implemented into your kid's life from both sides. And so having time to talk all of those out so that you can get on the same page and be a united front. That was your cue.
Oh, was it?
That's okay.
United front.
Well, but being on united front, this is something that Chad does very well. I am far from a perfect parent. I make mistakes all the time. But Chad is so gracious and never says it in front of the kids. When I make a mistake, he waits till they are gone, and then he comes to me and he's like, hey, probably could have done that better. And then I react and resolve and then go to them. And if I need to apologize to them, I do. But again, in front of the kids, we are always on the same page.
And I just want to be clear, we totally mess this up all the time.
Yeah.
And we're not perfect. So if we're portraying that, we failed because our goal was to stir the pot and make it look like we don't know what we're doing at all.
Yeah.
To help you feel better. So we feel better because we're all in this together and we're all trying to figure it out. Mm-hmm. But I'll tell you just the other day something that she did.
Oh, no.
Let me just tell you.
Oh.
I was wrestling with my son. My son, my warrior. And she comes up to me and goes, you need to be careful. If you hit him in the chest like that, his heart's going to stop beating.
I said it might stop beating because you hit him right
And I said,
here.
Great point. That's a great, never thought about that. Never considered making his heart stop while we're wrestling.
Yeah.
But so we get
You're
this,
welcome.
Like we have different views on things, right? I can't wrestle my son in front of her because his heart might stop, right? But when she's gone, he's tackling me, jumping on me, kicking me, punching me. I mean, he's doing the whole thing. So we see things differently, and so we have to get on the same page. But once we're on the same page, we got to keep a united front. Because the thing is, when you start doing that behind the back thing,
yeah.
like, hey, don't I'm gonna let you do it, but don't tell your mom, right? She does that with candy and the kids all the time. I would never do that. But don't do those things on a big scale because it does create that division and it teaches them that going behind someone's back is an appropriate thing to do. We don't want to do it. So we want to first get on the same page, whatever that looks like for you, and then we want to keep that united front. Again, this doesn't solve all the parenting problems, but it sure does help us start to make some progress. If parenting is truly a conflict, it's likely based on one of those. Okay. Last one, and we're
Number
done.
Five.
Take it away. This
Number
is all
five, so dear to my heart. Household responsibilities. All the wives.
Is that
I can
a tricky
see
one for all of us?
Yep. Yeah, yeah.
You can clap.
We can see y'all.
You're
you know
dismissed.
That? You're all like,
or is that way?
Listen, listen. No. It's all of us, but it can especially be hard when both spouses work.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, you're both coming home tired and you both don't want to do the chores. There's not a person in here who would be like, I would hate to have a maid come and do this for me every day. You all are like, that would be great if we could have a maid come and do this for me every single day. But the reality is we don't. And so we have to have time to call truce, talk it out, and kind of split some of this stuff up. When I went back to work full time for the first time, the things that I had been doing became too much, and I had to be like, hey, listen, I need your help. So how do we do that? Lean in to the things that you like doing. Chad does not mind folding clothes while he's watching football. So he leans into that and takes care of it. Neither one of us like to take out the trash, so our kids do it.
So we pretend like it doesn't exist.
Yeah. But then
that's why you have kids. Can we be honest? They're not there to make you happy. They're doing the chores.
Okay, yeah. No. But again, it is time for us to split the things that you don't want to do. And then for both of you to be receptive to what the other person is saying. But here's the other thing, ladies and gentlemen. You have to ask, okay? You cannot just be like, he knows that I'm tired and he is still not helping, because that does nothing to help him. You have to write it on a piece of paper and you just stick it on the fridge and then you read it to him. And then he knows the expectation loud and clear.
Do not actually do that.
Or don't actually do that. No, yeah.
All right,
yeah.
Don't
actually do it.
But to her point, you got to talk about it. Because it could be a moment where you're going, oh, look at my wife. She's amazing. She's just serving me. And man, just out of the kindness of her heart and inside, she's like, ain't out of the kindness of my heart. I'm about to kill you right now. I'm doing this because no one else is doing it. You know, so you want to make sure you talk about it so that it's something that you can address. And I'll leave this issue with it, or leave this thought with this. But most house fights come about because one spouse is keeping score.
Which
most
I'm guilty
of these fights, it's because you're keeping score. That may be the way you decide to go, to keep score and try to get even. That's great. But that's typically one's keeping score and the other is not. Mm-hmm. And so that's why there's tension, because you're counting the three things you did today. And I'm going, wow, my wife is amazing and just such a servant. That's awesome. Oh, she wants my help. Oh, I thought this was that acts of service thing. I guess not. This is a mutual thing. So if you don't talk about it, you won't know. And that's one of the best things you can do to get that in track. But believe it or not, household responsibilities is a major reason that people fight, including Mario Kart and lack of faith in driving.
Yep.
All right, let's conclude with this. 1 Peter 5:8, last verse, and we'll be done, says this. Stay alert. Watch out for your great enemy, the devil. He prowls around like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour. Basic Christianity teaches us that when a guy or a girl, man or woman, doesn't matter, when a person separates from God, you can't lose God if you're a believer in Christ. Right? He doesn't leave you. But we can create distance. We can get off track. We can become distant from God, at least to us. And when that happens, that's when we become vulnerable to the enemy and his attacks. And so that's basic Christianity. But the interesting thing is, in a similar way, this happens in marriage. That when a husband or a wife or both become distant from God, it opens the door for the enemy to cause major problems in your life and in your marriage. And so if basic Christianity says you as an individual should first chase after God, chase after him, get to know him, want to serve him, and in doing that, he'll begin to change you and to mold you and to shape into the man or the woman he wants you to be. But what's beautiful is this, is when you do that, it leads to great things in marriage. Because here's what happens. The first looks like this. A lot of us right now, we're having some conflict or some challenge in marriage or in relationship, and it's because we're doing it away from God. But if you notice, as we move closer to God, we also move closer to each other. There's a double benefit here. The first thing we should all want to do is to chase after God so that he can mold us and form us into who he wants us to be. When he does that, he makes us love better. He makes us more compassionate. He makes us more forgiving, more graceful. We're more aware. He can bring things to light that we don't think about on our own. And then the default response is, as we are moving toward him together, we are naturally drawing closer together as a couple. And so don't try to solve all these things only with the practical, though we've given you some great things. Start by chasing after God. And by the way, if you are looking at your spouse, don't do it right now because it'd be awkward, but if you're looking at your spouse and you're going, man, there are so many things that I need her to change. I just want to tell you, you can nag him or her all day long, but the best change that any of us can experience is allowing Jesus to come into our life and to make us new people. And so instead of nagging your spouse, pray that their relationship with God would grow so that as God does work in their life, they will begin to shape. And he makes us aware of the things that are going on in our world. I'm telling you, the moments that Sarah and I feel distant from each other almost always are rooted in both or one of us becoming distracted from our focus being on God. Yeah. When our focus is on him, it's amazing how all of a sudden we become more aware. We realize, hey, I was really rude there. Man, I didn't mean to, but it happened. I want to get back and I want to try to get that right. There's something that only God can do that creates this deep longing for us to not only love him, but to love each other well. So grow close to God, and by default, you're going to grow closer together. And I want to tell you, if you're here today and you're not walking with God and you're trying to do this on your own, it's not impossible. But man, when God comes into your life, he changes everything. And he helps you see things you just can't see without him. So just telling you, you need him in your life, and your marriage will be so beautiful with it. And if you're walking with him and you're feeling distant, it might be time to reconnect with him first, and then watch that overflow happen on your spouse.